Hello and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy, where we discuss latest news surrounding the Columbus Crew. I'm Jacob Myers, your Crew SC beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch. Today is May 7th, 3 days after the Crew lost 3-1 at DC United in what could be said or described as a controversial affair, to say the least. And one day now before Zlatan Ibrahimovic and the LA Galaxy come to Mapfre Stadium for a midweek game. That starts at 7:30 p.m. on Fox Sports Ohio, available on the radio on 97.1 FM, The Fan, and 1460 AM. As you probably know, the Crew acquired one of Caleb Porter's former players at the Timbers, defensive midfielder David Guzman, or David Guzman, one of the two is correct, was traded to the Crew for an international spot officially Monday, after the news began to come out on Friday. I was in the St. Louis airport when that began to trickle out, trying to track this down, but the Crew made it official Monday, so David Guzman's a new member of the Crew, and I believe Caleb Porter's first acquisition, I think the most recent one, would have been Robinho, and that was before Porter came on to the Crew in December, that would be. Anyway, I'll dive into what that move means for the Crew and what Guzman and Porter said about it as well. The two spoke to the media yesterday, being Monday. So today is also the final day of the primary transfer window. If the Crew make any news on that front, we'll address that later this week in another episode. If there's some major signing that could constitute an emergency pod, we could do that as well. I tweeted this out earlier, and I mean, we kind of talked about it as well. If the Crew are going to make a move, it was probably always going to be in the secondary transfer window come July and ending in August. But that said, currently on a 5-game losing streak, which their longest since 2000, I believe, when I looked at it, maybe they make a move or not. This is all kind of just speculation, but I think it's more possible now given the losing streak they're on, but still more likely it's addressed in the secondary transfer window. And Porter kind of said something to that effect when talking about why the Guzman deal was made now, so we'll get to that later. I'm recording this from my apartment. I'm getting some stuff done today before the Crew play the Galaxy tomorrow. By the time you hear this, I've probably already finished availability at training today, talking to Pedro Santos and Caleb Porter a little bit, and writing about why the Crew are trying to use what transpired on Saturday to motivate its narrative of being an underdog in this league and kind of having an underdog role, which I didn't know this, but Will Trapp made a reference Saturday that he had made a comment kind of the same nature in the past. And you probably saw this on social media after a DC game, but Caleb Porter had some pointed comments about this club not getting the respect he deserves. I think he said that at halftime as well, something to the effect of Rodney Dangerfield, no respect, get no respect. So anyway, I'll have a story kind of on that, and I understand the respect thing and the league not respecting the team is something this fan base has said for quite some time and was definitely apparent in the Save the Crew movement. Before I really paid attention to this team, that was something that even became apparent to me through the whole movement, something I didn't necessarily realize, but beginning to grapple with here in my first year on the beat. And I'm sure our columnist Mike Arace has written about that before the Save the Crew movement as well. There's also been plenty of evidence, and I'm sure some of you saw this on Twitter in terms of scheduling and whatnot, how the league, I mean, just this year puts Wayne Rooney and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, arguably, probably not even arguable, I would say the two biggest names the Crew has at Mapfre Stadium this year in home games. Those are on Wednesday when it's not as easy to get to games on a Wednesday and the attendance might be down a little bit. And then, I mean, when also saw that, and I'll kind of hash this out in the article, when one of the big soccer tournaments is in town here, they get at least, you know, somewhere around 3,000 more fans on than average to those games, and the Crew didn't have a home game then. Now, this year's a little different, obviously, given that, you know, we didn't know if the Crew would have a season in November, December. They're kind of all still figuring that out. So, but it's something that had been going on for a while, and Caleb Porter kind of talked about that, and these guys know as well. So I'll have a story on that, or just a little, you know, that added into the context of the Crew feeling like underdogs. And then I'll have three things to watch in the game against LA Galaxy, as I'm doing for each game this season. By the time you listen to this, if you're listening on Wednesday morning or afternoon, what have you, on your way to the game. Those will be up on dispatch.com. Also follow Dispatch Alerts and I'll tweet them out as well. Also, you can check out our Facebook group. Those stories will be there as well. All right, so enough of that. We'll discuss what happened to DC on Saturday, talk about where the Crew need to improve, and then a brief look ahead to the Galaxy. Sorry for not taking questions today. I'll put out a call for questions when we record Thursday for the upcoming LAFC match. Another really tough game and kind of what is a brutal stretch here for the Crew. And just one final thing, I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention before we move forward. I'd like to just point out kind of how absolutely fantastic our team's coverage here at the Dispatch did during the Blue Jackets playoff run. They lost in game six last night, so it's all over now. But our primary beat reporter, Brian Hedger, if you don't follow him, you absolutely should. He covered the team the whole season and wrote a fantastic story maybe about a week ago now, probably less than that, on Amy Jones, the mother and what I call hype woman of CBJ defenseman Seth Jones. It really, really great stuff. Got a lot of traction, so I hope you guys read that and enjoyed it. And I won't try to name everyone for the fear of leaving someone out, because it wasn't just the sports team. The Metro and Newside and our photographers of our operation here at the Dispatch were nothing but superb throughout this whole series. Covered it home and away and just really fantastic stuff. So if you haven't already, go check out all that stuff online. All right, so to Saturday and A Man from U.N.C.L.E. Yes, I hope you understand some of that reference. Even as a 23-year-old, I can make a reference to a somewhat outdated spy movie. It might be still a TV show. I think at one time it was. Might still be. Anyway, the call that, you know, for lack of a better term, was heard around at least the U.S. and the league here. Head referee Ted U.N.C.L.E. overturned a call in the 22nd minute, scored by Pedro Santos. Will Trapp collected a turnover after what appeared to be Luciano Acosta, DC midfielder, ran into Ted U.N.C.L.E. Around the center circle, coughed up the ball, Trapp played it ahead, and Santos took it in on the counter and scored what would have been the Crew's first 1-0 lead since April 6th. And I mean, everyone knows this in soccer, goals change games, and more so than any other sport. I mean, just for that to be taken off the board, given everything that had transpired the previous week and the scoring difficulties the Crew had, it had to mean a little bit more. It took about, you know, I was like a lot of people, because I was there in DC at Audi Field, like a lot of people, just saw them score, kind of move on with play, and it was really confusing for a while what they were even trying to review. I was listening to the TV broadcast, and the press box didn't have any TV, so I was kind of simultaneously listening to the online feed on Fox Sports Ohio, or might have been on Sports Time Ohio. Anyway, on the Fox Sports Go website, and the broadcast was about a full minute behind online than it was live action where I was watching it. But it was just confusing. At first, it seemed that Ted U.N.C.L.E. was looking at and with the video assistant referee up in the box talking through his earpiece, might have been looking at a foul on Jossie Zardes about, I don't know if it was a minute before the action started, but before the ball got to midfield, because it was closer to the DC box that the foul would have occurred. But then they placed the ball near midfield, kind of in that spot where Acosta, where it looked like he ran into U.N.C.L.E., and then they played from there. So, I mean, just from my own view of looking at this, and we don't have to go forever on this point, but someone was telling me in the press box that in 1998, I guess, in the FIFA World Cup, there was a call, not exactly like this, but that had similar outrage, and it seemed like nobody could believe why this call was made. And then a few days later, there was another angle that came out and showed that, okay, that maybe the referee was correct on the call. Technology has advanced so much since that, obviously, and it's difficult to see a way that wasn't just a play on. If you truly do think that a foul could have been called on Trapp, it might have just been a play on. But I mean, Caleb Porter's response, and I'm sure the league is taking a look at this as well, he said, referee gets in the way, referee fouls Acosta, and then the referee goes and looks at the television to bail himself out. I've never in my life seen anything like that ever. And that's what kind of looked like from the press box. And the more I've probably watched the replay 20 different times since then. And that Caleb Porter continued later, it's unbelievable, guys. I mean, honestly, it's unprecedented. I don't think this has ever happened, where a referee literally gets in the way and then uses an excuse on the VAR to bail himself out for a fair goal that we scored. he said, and the fact that he's looking at the VAR trying to bail himself out, I mean, there should be massive ramifications for that. Look, we don't have to continue on talking about this play. Obviously, the people in the Crew fan base and anyone who's watched this play probably has their opinion for now. If that's really the case, obviously, I think there's justification for what Porter said, for there being some type of punishment, if you will, for Ted Uncle, if he was trying to make, you know, an excuse for it. But we'll move on from that. It was a controversial call and one that ultimately changed the game. A few minutes later, probably maybe 1 minute later, there was a foul call that set up a set piece, and Caleb Porter also disagreed with that call. Will Trapp got a yellow on it. It might have been also from, you know, kind of leading off of the discussions that were being had at midfield after Ted Uncle had reversed the call. But the set piece led to the first goal, and that just totally kind of shocked the Crew. And that's something that I'll get into here in a second. But Will Trapp didn't explicitly say it was a bad call, but it was obvious that just about anyone in the locker room disagreed. Zach Steffen straight up called it the wrong call. Josh Williams said he had never played a half a soccer like that before, or didn't think he had. The scene in the locker room, I mean, going down there, which it's kind of a maze to get to the locker room at Audi Field. If we had to, me and another reporter had to be escorted down there, I would have never found it. There were a lot of media around waiting for Caleb Porter to address it, because I think we all kind of knew that he would be adamant in disagreement. And, you know, too, I'm not defending him in any way, but I think he just tells it like it is. I don't think it was anything malicious of him disagreeing with the officials. As he said, look, I haven't disagreed with the officials all year because I haven't seen a reason to, but when I do, I'm gonna, you know, call it out and back my club. And I think that's a reasonable approach for a coach. But then he also continued where they have to get better. And it's exactly what has kind of happened over these games. I drew a comparison to Portland when talking about this with someone. The Crew had played really well up to the 31st minute in that Portland game, and then gets stunned by a set-piece goal. This goal gets called back on an unfortunate call for the Crew, and then they give up a set-piece goal. That can't happen, and that's something that they have to improve on. But the scene in the locker room, we probably stood there for 20 or more minutes. They could have just gotten off the field or whatnot, but not a ton of just people really taking their time. Is extremely quiet. There were probably about 10 of us in the locker room waiting on some players. But yeah, I think it just felt like everyone was in disbelief at that point. But I mean, let's look at the areas the Crew can get better. And it's what I just said on that set piece. They can't allow that goal. They've been breaking down in moments. And we saw this in the Houston game as well. And that was one of the few games they didn't start real well. And yes, there were some rotation and whatnot, but they get stunned by a goal right off the bat. And it was something that they had preached about for a while. And I wrote about it at the time, is Alberto Lise, really dangerous winger in the league for Houston. The Crew makes a bad turnover and he comes down and gets a goal on the counterattack. That's something that they worked on. They get shocked by it. And then here, they're just not showing the resolve that I think they want to show. And I had written a few times that they had, but it seems like that's something that is still very much a work in progress. And even so, Will Trapp said this too. After they go down 2-0, when VAR, again, there had to be three or four different reviews of VAR. It's a really kind of bizarre scene. And I kind of wrote that in the takeaways after the DC match, is it's never going to be perfect. We've seen that in other sports, but there's got to be a way to kind of speed it up and not have in question if it jeopardizes the integrity of the game, especially when there's that much controversy after all these calls. But what Will Trapp was saying, that it's 2-0 at that time, and then the Crew kind of breaks down on the counterattack in the 61st minute. And I keep on calling him Jake Arrieta for some reason, but Arriola gets a goal and DC goes up 3-0. Those are the moments that the Crew can't falter. They need to obviously press forward, try to get that next goal, because 3-0 just kind of shuts the door out of there. But say that doesn't happen, they get that goal in the 75th minute off of what looked like an Olympiaco from Robinho in the corner, and he kicks it in but went off of Bill Hamid's hands and in the net. That could have been 2-1 at that point, and then you have 15 minutes plus stoppage time where the crew can push for a point, and maybe that kind of galvanizes a group after all it went through and they get a point on the road still. I think the conversation is completely different if they're just solid, sharp, and compact in that window between, you know, the 45th minute and when they allow that third goal in the 61st. So those are things the crew definitely have to work on. And Caleb Porter said as much too. It wasn't all just bashing officiating and whatnot. I think he said what he was going to say, and some players did as well, but they all went back to, you know, we have to be better in these areas. And I think that's very, very true at this point. And if you haven't, I encourage you to read my kind of takeaways from the match there. Here's something that Caleb Porter said yesterday on Monday, more about that incident. He said, "We've had some unfortunate things, but at the end of the day, we have to, again, look forward, and we have to throw everything into this next game being against LA Galaxy. It's that simple. We talked about a lot of things, and we got to get the job done this Wednesday, and I'm confident that the group will." So it's just being better in those moments is, I think, probably one of the bigger takeaways that the crew kind of had from this match and is working on in these few days leading up to tomorrow's match against the Galaxy. Now, if we can spend a little more time on that Santos goal, I don't think I've seen Pedro Santos be that aggressive in a long while. And he showed it in the preseason against FC Cincinnati, where he had a really glorious goal. He kind of just cut back onto his left foot and bent it in off the post. He was super aggressive after that incident with Ted Uncle at midfield, and Will Trapp got the ball and sprung it up to Santos. He just went straight at the goal, made a little move to his right, just one simple move, and blasted it past Hamid. It was something I think crew fans want to see a lot more out of Santos. Would have been his third goal at the time, and I think we need to see just a little more from the crew in general on this, on the counterattack. They want to be better in the middle block. That's kind of what that counter press is meant to do. When the crew lose the ball, get it back quickly and counterattack. And maybe their numbers are even or are just spaced out, and the defense isn't as compact as when the crew is in the build-up, and especially after DC gets the lead. Again, you saw how many defenders they had back there. The crew need to be better in the middle block, and especially against LA Galaxy, if they're able to do that, a team that likes to attack and likes to put the defense on its back foot. Those could be opportunities for the crew if they're really solid in that middle block and can counter like they did on the Santos goal. So, I mean, just to put a bow on all that, I think those are kind of the thoughts I had from the match. Obviously, the call changed a lot. The crew lost 3-1, and then looking at the standings, I'll give a little standings update after that match. At the top, DC United and Philadelphia Union, a team that was kind of at the bottom of the table through three games. Then they beat the crew when the crew had a lot of players on international duty. They're both tied atop the East at 20 points. Philadelphia has scored 21 goals. That's most in the East. And just looking through this, that's five behind LAFC, which has the most with 26. So they have the second most goals scored, more than LA Galaxy at the moment. So I think they're a pretty legit team. They have a 10-goal differential with DC being five. So the East looks like Philadelphia, DC, Montreal is at 17 points, Toronto at 16 points, and they have the most points per game. They've played 8 games compared to 11 with that Philadelphia, DC, and Montreal have played. So Toronto's fourth with 16. New York City FC, 15 points. Crew is still above the, I guess it's a black line here, but most people refer to it as the red line. They're in sixth at 13 points, and Orlando City has 12. New York Red Bulls and Atlanta United at 8th and 9th with 11. They've played two less games for New York than the crew, and then three for Atlanta. Atlanta plays 8 games. Chicago, 10 points, and then Cincinnati and New England at the bottom with 8 points. Western Conference, it's LAFC with 24 points, Galaxy 22, Dynamo and Sounders 19 points. The Dynamo, I believe, have the most points per game at almost 2.4. 8 games played, 19 points. Really strong start for them. FC Dallas, fifth with 17 points. Minnesota United, 15th. They're sixth with 15 points. San Jose is seventh with 11. And then the Portland Timbers won their third straight game after having beat the crew for their first win of the year. They're ninth with 10 points. Moving forward, like we said at the top, the crew acquired David Guzman from Portland for an international roster spot. I have a story up online right now that was in Tuesday's paper, so I guess that'd be today's paper, kind of diving in what this move means for the crew. Really, he just provides depth, and this is something that Caleb Porter has said from the beginning, is they don't want a 1 through 11. They want a 1 through 22, want a full squad. And I mean, you look at the teams he had in Portland, and especially the year he won in 2015, he had a lot of guys on the bench, like Fernando Adi, that were really, or now are very good MLS players that hadn't yet reached their potential. And he had those guys throughout the bench, throughout the 18. So he desperately needs to kind of build that, or wants to build that here with the club he has now. He likes the group he has now, but I think we've seen, and I kind of went into this, when the crew has rotated a little bit, I mean, they've lost the two games that they've had to rotate. So getting more depth is a priority for sure. Porter, what he said about Guzman, he said he's got a lot of bite in the midfield. And I mean, this kind of goes to the mentality that Porter wants to have with the crew, is just a winning attitude, a ruthless, gutless attitude to go on the attack, to finish anything, that any opportunity that they have. And he thinks that Guzman kind of brings that. Guzman, I mean, he has won championships. He won 6 championships, 3 different ones with Deportivo Saprissa in the Costa Rica top league before he came to Portland in 2017, where he played a year for Porter. He also played for Costa Rica in the 2018 World Cup, and Waylon Francis said he's known Guzman since like they were children. So I think that should be a good indicator that he can kind of fit right in with the chemistry of this group. Porter said this probably isn't the top need for the crew. That obviously, I think we all kind of knew that, and he was just pointing out the obvious. But you know, I think for fans wanting to see the crew make some more moves, especially in areas where they need to improve, like the attack, score more goals, this is a good thing to hear from the head coach. He said, quote, "Obviously, we know we need some other pieces as well, but we had the opportunity to get him, so we're not going to look past getting a player like him, even though there are, of course, some priorities that are maybe ahead of that." So saying it without saying it, the crew have priorities to find more scoring. They know that. He knows that. I think at some point, like I said, the primary transfer window ends today. The secondary one starts in July. At some point, they're going to address that. So, I mean, where does Guzman kind of fit in all this? I see him being the third defensive midfielder. I still expect, I mean, Trapp isn't, you know, moving out of the starting lineup until he moves out of the league. So Will Trapp and Artur are going to be starters, I would assume, still. But Guzman, I mean, he can push for that a little bit. He has some starting experience, and I think this is what they're getting. They want guys on the bench who can go in there and just be another starter, kind of like they have at center back right now with Jonathan Mensah, Josh Williams, and Gaston Sarro. But Guzman, what Porter kind of said about him is he can push forward a little bit, and he's not afraid to attack from that central midfielder spot. And I mean, aside from the goal last year that Will Trapp scored against Orlando City in a stoppage time in such a dramatic moment, they don't really have a central midfielder like that that can score when he's got the ball on his foot. Now, don't expect Guzman to score 5+ goals a year, but maybe chip in a couple and a few assists as well. So maybe he can add a little bit to that as well. I think this was a good acquisition for the crew, especially if they're looking to get their depth a little bit. So I'm kind of rambling on here, but just a short preview. The LA Galaxy question kind of is, will Zlatan play? As I kind of mentioned earlier, got Rooney on a Wednesday and Zlatan on a Wednesday. Having big players is always going to boost attendance. It makes it more difficult when they come on a Wednesday. But the Galaxy are in a 3 games and 8 day stretch as well. They played Saturday, lost to the New York Red Bulls. It was a really good win for the Red Bulls. They kind of needed something like that on their home field. 3-2 was the final there. Zlatan played in that game. There were some photos that he is at least in Columbus and practicing with the Galaxy. They practiced at Ohio State on Monday. I'm assuming maybe the same on Tuesday. We'll see if he plays on Wednesday. I think anyone that's going to Moffray Stadium will want to see that. Saw a few people when Rooney came here in England jersey, a Rooney England jersey, so maybe there'll be some PSG jerseys here as well. But he has 9 goals so far this season, and the Galaxy in general, a very offensive team. They've scored 17 and allowed 11. I think if you're looking at this team early in the season, they look like a Supporter Shield contender. They've been linked this week with an Argentinian forward that could add some depth to the forward there. the forward position. They lost Roman Alessandrini earlier this year, who has scored double-digit goals this past two seasons, along with 21 assists, so a very, very dynamic player up there. He injured his knee earlier this season, is likely out until the fall, so they're looking to kind of shore up some depth there, and really, I think they believe they can go after a cup this year. If you have Zlatan, you should be able to. The Crew, I mean, in this game, they're going to have to play a compact defense. They're going to have to be much sharper with the ball in their own end, with defending, that is. They were fine when they were on the ball, but defending in their own areas are going to have to be much better than they were against DC United, against this Galaxy attack. They'll have to also maximize their opportunities with, I kind of mentioned this earlier, with a team like the Galaxy that loves to attack, I think there are going to be some counter opportunities for the Crew, and they can maybe capitalize on that. Being a midweek game, there could be some lineup changes for both teams. I don't think you'll see a ton for the Crew, especially when I believe it was Jossie Zardes and Federico Higuain that went out early just to preserve them a little bit. So I would assume those two could play all three games here. And for the Galaxy, maybe there's a couple changes there because they do play a home match on Saturday, so maybe they want, you know, to entertain the home fans a little bit and have everyone playing then. For the Crew, I think you should expect the same lineup as DC. Maybe there'll be one or two changes, but like at center back where they have a lot of depth, but and maybe winger, maybe Justin Miriam goes there, who wasn't on the 18 this week, and that was pretty interesting. But maybe there's one or two changes. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same exact lineup. There could be some changes in the 18 as well, though. So that game's at 7:30 Wednesday. That's all I have for you. Be sure to follow the Dispatch on Twitter. Also, feel free to join our Facebook group as well. Post all of the content in there. You can follow me on Twitter. Post our Crew content as well at Jacob_Myers_25. Can't forget those underscores. Follow us on Twitter at Dispatch Alerts. Patrick Flaherty's the producer of this fine show. You can follow him at ThePodfather2. Please subscribe and rate us on whatever platform you get your podcast from. I subscribe on Apple Podcasts. I'm actually not entirely sure where our podcasts are available in terms of platform. So if it's not on your platform, send me an email, note on Twitter, whatever, and maybe we can get those on whatever platform you use your podcast. Anyway, there should be another episode this week, hopefully in the afternoon Thursday, breaking down what transpired against the Galaxy, looking ahead to LAFC. That's all I have for you now. Thanks for listening. Be sure to read our coverage and consider subscribing to Dispatch to support all we do here every day. All right, that's all I have for you. Patrick, kick us out of here.